Good morning and welcome to WGTD and this, our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. George Patton once said, "Prepare for the unknown by studying how others in the past have coped with the unforeseeable and the unpredictable." Our guest today is a woman who is helping to make history come alive through the historic representation of the lives of women, both famous and some imagined. Have you ever wished you could ask questions of Eleanor Roosevelt? Have you ever wondered about the heartaches of Mary Todd Lincoln? Have you ever reflected on the times and people of the Salem witch trial days? If you have, you'll be fascinated with our guest today, Caledonia resident Jessica Mickna, who travels across the country and the state giving first-person presentations of these and other women in a program called First Impressions. She presents to historical societies, schools, libraries, living history museums, senior centers, churches, and more. For this, Jessica last year was honored with the prestigious Presidential Service Center's Distinguished Service Award. So what brought Jessica to this calling and what has she learned in this career? What lessons do women hold out for our lives? How do we benefit in historical understanding by these representations? These and other questions are what we'll explore this morning with our interesting guest. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for coming. We did talk together on this radio show, and it was about 10 years ago.
Yes.
And what has amazed me is all the things you've added. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But for our listeners, could you just start with what brought you to this? I understand from little on you had a great interest in history.
Well, from the time I was a very young child, I have loved history. Any time, any period, I love history. And I wanted to present the women of history, who are a very important part, 52% of the population. I wanted to tell people about the important women in lives of some important men and some notable women. And at first I thought about writing about it, but no, and I like to act. I like theater. I love theater. And I thought if I came out as Eleanor Roosevelt or Mary Lincoln or Dolly Madison, and I could draw my audience into the period into which these women lived, I think I would really make a bigger impression than just writing about it.
And you had some background in theater, did you not?
I started in theater and had some changes in my life. Got married, raised four daughters, was in healthcare for many years, worked with my husband in a small business for many years. And later on, after my children were grown, I was still employed. But that's when I came up with the idea of I'm hitting the road with First Impressions.
Wow. It is so amazing. And I'll just say again that I'm surprised since 10 years ago. I think at that time you had Mary Todd Lincoln and Eleanor Roosevelt and Simple.
Sari Simple.
Sari Simple. And that was it. And 17 years, I mean, these many years later, 10 years maybe since you and I talked, you have 17.
I have 17 programs, 15 different characters.
Wow. Do they just pop in your imagination, or do you go researching?
It's a tremendous amount of research before a lady is presented to the public, before she's ready for prime time. It's usually a minimum of about 2 years of research. And even after I have the research finished, I really never finish because I'm always finding something. Someone might mention something to me when I'm at a performance. The member of the audience comes up and talks to me, says, "Oh, I read this, I heard this." Well, maybe I hadn't read that or heard that, so I have to trace it down. Is it true? Is it? What bearing does it have on my character? So I'm constantly researching, and there's always new information on historical figures. There's always something that you can glean from perhaps an article in even a scientific journal where someone might talk about Mary Lincoln's mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always working on research.
Mm-hmm. And is it hard for you to remember portrayals you don't do as often? I mean, I assume there are more popular ones and less popular
ones. Oh, most certainly. I rehearse. That's the most important thing. There are times when I have to pull out the original script and I have to run through it. But it seems once I finally get into that person and put on those clothes and oftentimes take on their voice, it just comes to me. And I remember the script. It's never been difficult for me. Memorization has never been a challenge at all for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you live with these characters? What interviewed an author, and she says she'd be diagnosed as something if they knew how she wakes up and or finds an other character from a past book comes back to her or something.
Exactly. Between my husband and I, my husband acts as my manager. Mm-hmm. He does all the scheduling and so on. We find ourselves using sentences and phrases that the characters use in their monologues.
Oh my goodness. What portrayals are you asked to do the most?
I would say the most popular are the presidential wives. I have 6 first ladies. The presidential wives are very, very popular. And Laura Ingalls Wilder, the author of the Little House on the Prairie books. And Golda Meir has been very, very popular.
Good. Good. After your degree in psychology, mm-hmm. you worked, as you said, in research. But do you think you were thinking about this all along, or do you think it kind of came to you after the kids were grown and gone?
No, it was there all the time. I kind of like to refer to it as the marble in a tin can. It kept rolling around and making a lot of noise. But raising children, having a job, it was something I always kept up with my reading, but it was something that kind of was on the back burner. Until I had that freedom, the facility I was working at was closed. I had the choice of going somewhere else, and I said no. I was already doing first impressions. I had 2 characters at that time. And I took off on it. And once my husband took over the management, that's when it really flowered, because he really went out there and did the promotions and mm-hmm. did the scheduling and keeps me very busy.
Yeah. When you're doing a portrayal, when you're doing that 2 years of study or 3 years, and you're coming up with this portrayal, do you have to kind of decide where the truth lies? How historically accurate do you feel you
yes.
have to be?
Oh, yes. You have to be careful. You want to present the historically accurate portrait with all the bumps and pimples that the character might have. But you must make it entertaining. Nobody wants to sit there for a full hour while you recite dates and which general
Absolutely.
Died under which tree. You have to make it entertaining. You have to use humor. Even in the most desperate of situations, the death of the presidential children, the death of a president, you still incorporate in that presentation humor. It keeps your audience, it lightens it up, it keeps them interested.
Is all the traveling that you do, is that stressful or is it enjoyable? Or?
I think for the most part, it's a lot of fun. It's more fun when my husband is able to come mm-hmm. with me. It's nice to have the company. But then when I'm traveling alone, I think that alone time is very healthy for me, because when I come back to the hotel, I will get some takeout, sit down, and I'll work on my research projects. I have been to libraries all over the country, and I am a library person. I can pass hours in the library. My husband comments that once I get into a library, I'm in a different zone.
You mentioned earlier on writing. Do you think about at some point putting these in written form, or you probably have the portrayals in? But
do you
think about doing a book about these people?
I've been asked recently again, and repeatedly people are asking for, when does the DVD come out? I want to watch this again and again. We've had some DVDs done at various times when people have asked if they could record for, because, you know, they might want it for another mm-hmm. time. Everything I have is protected under copyright laws, of course. Right. But we've considered it, and my husband has been after me to write mm-hmm. About my different characters and even my original creation, Sari Semple. All of her stories are original, She's an Appalachian storyteller of the 19th century.
Okay.
And he's been after me to possibly get that into some kind of a book. The future, mm-hmm. maybe the future.
And, you know, as we get older, we can't always travel. You're not at that stage at all yet, but it'll come, and maybe that would be a good time where you could focus on
exactly.
the writing.
Exactly. I've always said to myself, I will stop this when I feel that I am no longer able to present a good program. Mm-hmm. If I can't do it, I'm not getting out there.
Yeah.
I will stay home and write.
Well, you can add me to list of people who would like to be able to go to my computer and watch you. I read these 17 and I think, oh my gosh, like Laura Ingalls Wilder. I would love to hear your portrayal of her. So, and Golda Meir and Helen Keller. There's just such interesting people here and such interesting times. So let's talk about one of them for starters. Like so many people, I have a real special interest in the life of Mary Todd Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln, such a hero. And I began to I've read very much about both of them. How do you describe your portrayal of Mary Lincoln?
My portrayal of Mary is a very sensitive portrayal. I try to portray all of my, especially my first ladies, all of my characters, but particularly the first ladies, with the absolute utmost respect that is due these women. And that's Mary, great. Especially, she's been dealt some really terrible things have been said about her during the entire 150 years. I try to portray her as I imagine that she was. And from my research and from portraits that people who knew her, the way they explain her life and her personality, she was extremely intelligent, very well educated, and she was very much in love with Mr. Lincoln. There just was no one else. And we are finding out through female historians writing these days that Mary had a very, very wonderful admirer. Mr. Lincoln loved her dearly.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the many things where her biography is so different
yes.
from some people. Some see her as a support for Lincoln, a burden to Lincoln, a bright, accomplished woman, a mentally ill woman, a selfish woman, a sensitive woman. And I think she just, in her lifetime, so many people have kind of not, I think, put her in the perspective that
exactly.
you put her in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think kind of that happened with Jackie Kennedy. You know, somebody
I think so
who
too.
Was very close to the couple said, you know, they talk about Marilyn Monroe and all that, but he adored
exactly.
her and she adored him.
I think Mrs. Kennedy was in a position just as Frances Folsom Cleveland was when they remarried after the president's death.
Uh-huh.
I was a youngster when Mrs. Kennedy remarried. I was a young woman, I should say. And I remember the dreadful things that the press turned on her. And I thought, how unfortunate. But you see that with Frances Cleveland when she remarried after the president's death. The public reacted to her in the same way, as though there was this grand betrayal of the president's memory.
Do you think it's true that Mary Todd Lincoln kind of generally died in spirit after the death of Abraham?
Oh, most certainly. In fact, she wrote to a friend of hers after the president's death, when that bullet entered Mr. Lincoln's head, he was sent into divinity. And I was cast to hell. And in the 17 years that she lived after the president's death, she was just waiting. She was waiting to be reunited with him because she was very, very much in love with him.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little about the costumes and stuff later. But I imagine with her, you have a lot of pictures, so you don't have
oh, yes.
to make up the costuming. But the voices fascinate me. Would you be willing to say anything? And how did you come up, first of all, with the voice of Mary Todd Lincoln?
Well, Mary Lincoln was from Lexington, Kentucky. She was from a very, very powerful and wealthy family. She would have a very genteel, sweet Southern accent, nothing like the Dukes of Hazzard sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And she would have been a very soft-spoken lady, mm-hmm. because that's the way ladies were raised in mm-hmm. the South in the 1800s. And in fact, I think maybe Mary would like to step up and say a few words to your audience.
Our listeners would love that.
Well, a very good morning to you. Oh, I'm so pleased to be able to talk to all of you this morning. I never tire of telling folks all about Mr. Abraham Lincoln. We married in 1842, had four wonderful sons, and in my lifetime I would lose three of those beautiful boys. I've never been very close to my sole surviving son, Mr. Robert Todd Lincoln. You know, he's named after my papa, but he is nothing like his papa. And he's nothing like my papa.
Thank you, Jessica. It's so amazing. For those of you who've heard that, you can contact Jessica Mikna in Racine, Wisconsin, Caledonia. And if you would be interested in having her come to your program. And in fact, Jessica and I got back in touch because Jessica will be presenting Mary Todd Lincoln at UW Parkside through the All program. On May 20th of this year. So if you want to see the portrayal of Mary Todd Lincoln, which I have seen a couple times, and it's spectacular. You have two portrayals of her, right?
I actually have three portrayals of Mary Lincoln. The first is called Preserve the Union, and you are meeting Mrs. Lincoln on April 14th, 1865, while they are obviously still in the White House, in the President's House. And the second is called Intimate Conspiracy. And because audiences seem to have so many questions on Mary's mental health, and so we designed a program that concentrates on her insanity trial of 1875, and more specifically, her relationship with her sole surviving son, Robert. And although I'm kind of prejudiced, but my favorite one is called A Widow Forgotten. And that encapsulates Mary's entire life and her life with Mr. Lincoln. And as Mary told you earlier, she never tires of telling stories about her Mr. Lincoln.
And A Widow Forgotten is the one that is most likely to be the Mary Todd Lincoln that we do on May 20th. So again, you can call UW Parkside's All program about that. Eleanor Roosevelt is closer to a woman of our own time, so I imagine that, you know, you have video and lots of things
exactly.
You can see about her. Are the audiences more likely to inspect your accuracy or the aspects of her character?
Oh, yes. Yes. I have to make myself look considerably taller in order to portray
Eleanor.
How
do you do that?
You use hats and heels.
Okay.
And I can go from my height of 5'4" to about 5'10" with the use of hats and heels. So I'm very close to Mrs. Roosevelt's height. Makeup. The use of wigs. All of my ladies have different wigs because the hairstyles and the hair colors are very different for all of my characters. Eleanor was a big challenge, though. I was very concerned about portraying Eleanor. I'd had a lot of requests. And as I was preparing Eleanor, I was getting ready almost to bring her right out to the public. My older sister was diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And she was in hospice care. And every day after work, I would go and spend time with her. And I told her, I'm very nervous about portraying Eleanor Roosevelt. And she gave me some very good advice. She said, you've got to do it. Because if you don't, you will always wonder, what if? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, just leave the room quietly. Mm-hmm. And it worked. Eleanor was introduced in 2005.
And I'll have you do the voice at the end of these questions, but you sound just like her. I could not believe it when I first heard you do her. What is so interesting about Eleanor Roosevelt? It's probably a lot to do with she was a much different first lady than even than anyone has been since, but certainly than anyone had been before. So what were the forces in her life that were compelling? And
well, there were the deaths of her parents. She was orphaned by the time she was 13 years old. Both of her parents were gone. And she really looked after her younger brother, Hall. They were very close all life long. And they were shuttled with different family members. And she always felt at a loss, and she longed to have a very close-knit family. She would marry a distant cousin, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and they would have six children together. Five of those children would survive to adulthood. And along the way, they hit some bumps in their marriage. The president had affairs. He was not president yet, but he would have affairs along the way. But I think the most shattering one for her was the betrayal of her secretary. She felt very betrayed by this young woman, Lucy Mercer. Right. And Lucy would have an affair with President Roosevelt from about 1915 until his death in 1945. And that really changed Eleanor. She became her own person, and she became the president's business partner. Mm-hmm. And their business was the government of the United States. I think they were really the template for the power couple of Washington.
Okay. Because she was as politically interested he was.
I think one very telling story about Eleanor was a friend of theirs, Harry Hopkins. He was a friend of both the Roosevelts, but he was in the Roosevelt administration in different capacities. And Harry was being interviewed one day by a newspaper man. And the reporter asked, "Does Mrs. Roosevelt really have that much power?" And Harry responded, "You have never seen real power until you have seen Eleanor. Look into Franklin's eyes and say, 'You will do this.' That's power."
So was she a threat to her husband? And do you think Franklin ever realized the enormous impact that she had?
I think there were times when she remarked that he would be jealous because she received more letters than he did. And they had to put on more secretaries when she became the first lady. And that was something new, that a first lady would receive the absolute just deluge of letters. And Franklin was a little, he would like to joke with her that, "What is it that you have that everybody wants to talk with you? I want to know your secret." But she was a first lady who went out there. She was out there in the public.
And I think some of that, as you reflected, was because of the affair. In fact, he died with Mercer.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. She was at his side. And I think Eleanor, she fought to overcome shyness. She was afraid of everything as a child. She was afraid of mice, the darkness, water. But she fought back. And she gives some wonderful advice years later in many of her books of overcoming fear and overcoming what you perceive as your shortcomings. Mm-hmm. She always said that no one can make you feel inferior unless you give them your permission.
Yes, that's a quote often seen, often used, and no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. Eleanor and Franklin had, as you said, six children. But what do you think about the discussion about her? Their children were certainly not very successful or very happy. Or did she have regrets, do you think, about
parenting? I think she did. It sorrowed her that there were so many divorces among her children. She called them multiple, infidelities or something. And she was very disappointed in that. But she wasn't disappointed in her children. She was very proud of them. But I always feel quite sympathetic toward her sons, particularly. Can you imagine what it was like to follow in the footsteps of these two giants? Absolutely. That is a tremendous burden to place on a child's shoulders, that they should outdo what these absolute titans of politics did. Right. I think that would be almost impossible to expect of someone. And it was particularly difficult for her son, Franklin Jr. They called him Franklin the Second. He was very unsuccessful in politics, ran for a variety of things, and just couldn't win, even with this famous name.
You know, there's some hint in some people's writings that she was a lesbian. Certainly she got her own place, and she had a lot of women friends. Do you allude to that in your presentation?
I do not. Mm-hmm. I think that is a very 21st century view. And another aspect for me is, so what?
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of her life. The reason, on the other hand, that I don't think that she acted on those impulses was because of her upbringing. We have to remember the time, the place that she was brought up.
Yes.
And I don't think that inclination was there. She did have friends, many female friends, as many women, myself, do. I think particularly the one reporter, she was looking for more with a relationship with Eleanor, and I don't think Eleanor acted on it. Mm-hmm. But that's my thought.
Before we leave Eleanor, does she have anything she would like to say to our listening audience?
Well, I'm very happy to see everyone today and speak to you. You know, it's usually my husband who is behind the microphone doing the radio broadcasts. He became very famous, you know, for his fireside chats. But I've always been out there, always looking to help those that I met, and I've met thousands of wonderful people in my career. As the First Lady, I'm rather happy not to be the First Lady any longer, for I don't have to agree with everything the President does and says. And thank you so very much for meeting me today.
Jessica, you are amazing. You are absolutely amazing. Anybody listening would think that was Eleanor on the radio.
I love her. I love her. My dog does not like her voice, but I love it.
I've been always fascinated in a sad way about the Salem witch trials, but I was surprised you put that on your list, because I thought, how do you do a one-person portrayal of that? So could you tell our listeners about that story and how you came to create?
I had a lot of people asking for something that was appropriate for the month of October. And of course, you know, they're looking for goblins and witches and vampires. And I had read, and in fact, I had done a paper in my past life on the Salem witch trials. And one particular character was very, very sympathetic, and it was a very sad case. Rebecca Nurse was 71 years old when she was executed as a witch in 1692. And the peculiar thing about her, that Rebecca Nurse was a very upstanding citizen in the colony of Salem, Massachusetts. She was a landowner. She and her husband were very well known and very well liked by their neighbors. And that she would have been singled out to be brought forth and questioned and tortured and would not admit. She denied that she had anything to do with this witchcraft. Unfortunately, she would be executed in July of 1692.
So, do you
hanged
end
as a witch?
Do you end your portrayal with her death? Then I assume
no. I end it. She does. Really shows you what happens when they put that noose around your neck, which for many people is very, very disturbing and it's very painful.
Yes.
Really, I mean, so far as I'm concerned, emotionally. That drains you.
You know, that hysteria that I read witches and I read other Salem witch trial things. And, you know, that hysteria that happened, how do you think that came about?
I think we have to look back at the period. Witches were very real to these people. They were superstitious, and they had a very deep belief that there were witches, that there were demons waiting around that corner to lure you to that dark side. There was superstition, but I think there were all of the very, very base emotions within human beings that were interacting at that time. Lust, greed, envy, hatred, all of those things really came together and produced this really dreadful, sad time in our history. It wasn't the first trial and it wasn't the last, but it has become really the centerpiece of what we think of in early colonial history, that these mm-hmm. people, 24 innocent, and they were. They mm-hmm. none of these people, you know, did anything wrong, committed a crime. But we also have to remember that at that period of time, witchcraft and witches were very, very real.
Yes. And it's interesting that Europe, sort of the witch thing kind of stopped about that time or a little after, and it did in our country too. That hysteria is often linked to young children, especially girls, who were so fearing of the afterlife and hell. And do you think that fits into what happened?
Well, the girls' ages ranged from the oldest being around 19 years old, the youngest about 9. But we have to, again, we have to take it in the context of the 17th century. Women in general, and girls, young girls in particular, their lives were not much fun, to say the least. Mm-hmm. In those years of their early childhood and into as they grew into young women, they were watched closely.
Yes.
They lived a very tight life. Their life was centered around the home and preparing to become a wife and a mother. That was the only choice a girl had. That was it. You became a wife and a mother, and you were there to serve your children, to serve your husband, and to serve God in being a righteous and religious, faithful wife.
And there's a little lesson in that, isn't there, about repressive, confining
I think it is.
Backgrounds.
Because when these young girls began to toss out these accusations saying that that Goody Rebecca Nurse or Goody Osborne, they are witches, the upper echelon, the upper crust of society, the ruling class listened to them and took them seriously. And they became rock stars. Mm-hmm. People came from miles around to watch these trials and to meet and to see these young girls and women.
I assume you've gone to the site of this.
I have not been there, but I've gotten to know people out in the area, you know, on a first-name basis by communicating with them when I was doing my research. One gentleman there who is quite a genealogist, he's been just a marvelous help. His family goes all the way back to the Mayflower, have lived in the area since day one, really. And he's just been a marvelous help. He still sends me information when he comes on something new. He'll send me information and say, if this is of interest to you, can it help? So he's been very helpful.
I look at these portrayals you're doing now that I haven't seen, and I would love to see them. But let's go to Laura Ingalls Wilder. You know, we've all loved the books.
Her books and the TV show.
Even the TV show, yes. So was that a big decision to do that? You do portray her, by the way, as an older woman or younger?
Yes. Well, if I portrayed her as a younger woman, she hadn't written anything yet. So I would have nothing to talk about. I would have nothing to say. You meet Laura Ingalls Wilder. She's 66 years old, and she is very excited because she will introduce you to her very first book, Little House in the Big Woods, uh-huh. that was published in 1933. And she goes all the way back with her memories of her family, her ma and pa and her sisters, her little baby brother who died as an infant, and brings you all the way back to how did I start to write a book? She was a professional writer for many years prior to her writing her first Little House book. I don't think she thought it was going to be that big. She just didn't have that in mind. She thought she was just wanted to introduce the world to the life of Laura Ingalls growing up on the prairie of growing America.
Did you feel you had to, do you feel you have to create a voice for a woman like that?
Although I have one recording of Laura. I have one recording. She has a very soft-spoken little twang in her accent. Lived many years in Missouri, and so she has a bit of a little, Midwestern twang in the voice. But you have to create the only. I have very few that I know exactly what they sounded like, mm-hmm. So I have to use information on their dialect. When did they live? Where did they live? Where were they born and where did they grow up? Because all of those things have an influence on what they will sound like.
And does she reflect on if she's older? Oh, she's just creating her first book.
Just had her first book published.
I hope she knew what a legacy she ended up
Well,
creating.
She ends her program with saying, "This is my very first book. I do hope you like it. I hope you'll read it. It is my very first, but I can assure you it won't be my last."
Oh, Jessica, you're so good. Let us know a little bit about Dolly Madison, how you portray her.
Oh,
and what's really
Dolly.
Interesting about, what isn't interesting about
Dolly?
Oh, gosh.
Dolly is a flashy lady. Dolly Madison was, of course, the wife of President James Madison, our fourth president. She was also the hostess in the president's house for 8 years under the administration of Mr. Thomas Jefferson. She was born into rather a poverty-stricken life, but her father chose a husband for her when she was about 24. She was widowed by the time she was 27 with two young children. Her one child would die in infancy. She only had the one son, but she caught the eye of a certain congressman from Virginia known as the Little Madison, 5'6", very frail of frame, as she put it. And they fell madly in love, and she would become the first lady. She was a remarkable, remarkable lady, very fashionable. Wears very elegant clothes, introduced ladies wearing turbans. That became the fashion when Dolly Madison was the first lady.
Sounds a little like Jacqueline Kennedy.
Yes. Oh, she was very, very. And she was a very tall lady for her time. She was about 5'8". And so when she stood next to the president, she would actually stand with her knees bent so that their shoulders were at the same level, so she didn't overshadow her Jamie.
Yes. I can't ask you about all these people, so it's just so interesting. But we have a few minutes yet. So I wondered on the portrayal of Helen Keller.
Oh,
then you
yes.
come out as a blind
yes.
woman. And tell us a little bit about Helen.
Well, that was a suggestion from the International Lions Club, and I've appeared at many conventions and Lions Club events and meetings. And I was very reluctant because in portraying Helen, I did not want her to be disrespected in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I rehearsed and learned her voice because I wanted people to understand what she overcame in order to speak. And I do begin the program as Helen, but sometimes people find her voice difficult to understand. And so I break character and I go into a third person. I talk about her life,
okay.
Which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Her birth, being born a very healthy child, illness at a very early age, which ended up taking her sight and her hearing. And yet this woman would go on to achieve a college degree, become an advocate for the disabled, and a spectacular philanthropist. And as I like to put it, one of the best friends that the human race has ever had.
Beautifully said. I guess we have time to ask about one more. I was sort of surprised to see Mrs. Charles Dickens.
Yes, there was a Mrs. Charles Dickens. Mrs. Charles Dickens, Catherine Hogarth Dickens, has a wonderful story to tell about life with Charlie. And it wasn't always easy. She would be the mother of 10 children. Wow. And later in her life, her husband would throw her out of their house because he was having an affair with a very young woman by the name of Ellen Ternan. And in fact, he made a notation that his wife, Mrs. Dickens, was not permitted to attend his funeral. And so it was a very heartbreaking story. But in Catherine's words, she would remain true and faithful and always be in love with Mr. Charles Dickens.
Wow. Fantastic. I wanted to do Gold in My Ear yet, but we're kind of nearing the end here. So
oh, she's amazing.
Say something. You can say something about her, Will.
Oh, well, I'm very happy to be with you today. If you don't recognize my voice, I was at one time the Prime Minister of the State of Israel. My name is Golda Meir. I was born a very poor child in Tsarist Russia. They came to the United States. I was 7 years old. I spoke no English. But over the years, I would meet many wonderful friends who would help me along the way. I left to go to Israel in 1920 with my husband, Morris Meyerson, and I rose in the political climate of Israel to become the prime minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. I would like to thank our guest today, historical reenactor Jessica Michna, for your work in helping all of us to know who we truly are by making individuals from history come alive to us. You open doors for all of us into a deeper understanding of what drives the lives and times that we inhabit. For that and for being with us today, we thank you, Jessica.
Thank you very kindly.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and I hope you will join us here at WGTD every Saturday morning for this program as we explore the important subjects that touch our lives. Because as we all know so well, community matters. Take care.